Hebrews 13, 1 through 3. A word this morning about hospitality. The writer says, keep on loving each other as brothers and sisters. Don't forget to show hospitality to strangers, for some who have done this have entertained angels without realizing it. Although, let me just say that angels and tourists, this really pushes my faith. All tourists in the room excluded. Remember those in prison as if you were there yourself. Remember also those being mistreated as if you felt their pain in your own bodies. The Word of God for the people of God. One of my wife's favorite stories to tell, and I've told it here years ago, is about her former boss who moved to our hometown in Georgia. His name, great name, was Sconey. I don't know if that was his real name, but that's what everybody called him. And when he moved south, it was a culture shock because he was from Chicago. And not just a neighborhood of Chicago, inner city Chicago. He was a well-traveled man, worldly man, but his experience had never prepared him for life in the deep south. First, he had never eaten grits. He didn't know what chicken and dumplings were, which is already reason to be suspicious. He had not the foggiest idea of what a bag of pork rinds were. He had never attended cotillion class as a child. He had never been to a church homecoming with dinner on the grounds. It's all very foreign to him, and so was the southern hospitality that he encountered that was just dripping off of people's words. One evening, shortly after moving into their new home, Sconey and his wife were unpacking their boxes and trying to settle into all these alien surroundings, and there was a knock at the door, and out on the stoop was this typical sweet, small-town lady, gray-haired and an apple pie in hand. And in she came to welcome. And she gave the usual welcome-to-town speech, drawling over every word, and she finally ended the conversation with an invitation for her new neighbors to join her in worship the following Sunday at the First Baptist Church. Well, Sconey wasn't much of a believer, and he said, no, ma'am, I won't be attending church Sunday or ever. I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. Well, this lady had heard about atheists, but she had never met one on Woodlawn Circle in Calhoun, Georgia. And so she's just shattered by this, and she turns to the wife, trying to salvage the moment, and says, what about you, dear? Will you go to church with me on Sunday? And Sconey's wife said, no, I'm a Jew. She turned and went out the door with her apple pie. I don't know if she meant to take it away from him or if she was just so shocked she forgot to put it down on the counter. But over the next decade that Sconey would live there, she never came over again. She never invited them to a barbecue. She never borrowed any tools. She never tried to engage them in any conversation ever again. And they certainly did not get any apple pie. Not that they got to enjoy the first one. You know, it used to be that everybody we met was like us. Not anymore. From religion and race, politics, lifestyle, the diversity that is around us now is far greater than any of us have ever experienced, particularly if you were raised in the Deep South. And so in shock, we exercise a sort of tempered kindness. We are kind toward those who are like us. And we keep our apple pies away from those who are not like us. We retreat into our homes and we retreat into our churches, keeping anything that's unfamiliar at a distance. And it's hardly, when you do that, that's hardly what you can call hospitality, really. Researchers have a term for our behavior in the 21st century America that we live. It's called cocooning. What a picturesque word that is. We wrap and insulate ourselves with people, practices, and ideas that are just like us. With news programs we agree with websites that reinforce our beliefs, with people and clubs that are just like us, never challenging us, and the layers grow thicker and thicker so that we are blind to anyone or anything that is different than we are. And the result is less and less cohesiveness as a society. We splinter into what you hear all the time now, special interest groups, fragmentation, with less and less social engagement, just plain less civility toward other people, less cooperation and connection with others outside our immediate circle, and it results in greater conflict, greater distrust, greater hostility and competition. And if there has ever been an accurate rendering of 21st century America, that is it. Robert Putnam, a sociologist who has done groundbreaking work in this area, wrote a book some years ago where he took up this subject, and the name of his book is entitled Bowling Alone. Great title, because still, in the 21st century, you may not know this, the most participated in sport in America is bowling. More Americans bowl each year than do anything else. When's the last time you played a football game? When's the last time you played a baseball game? Any of y'all still picking up basketball games around the hoop around the neighborhood? Probably not. But once a year you might find yourself at a bowling alley with the kids or the grandkids. I don't know. Here's the thing, bowling alone is such an apropos title because no one bowls in leagues anymore. When you go with your family, you are bowling alone, disconnected from other people that are around you, and that is his description of U.S. society. We live in isolation. We are strangers, according to Putnam. And as a result, we are witnessing the disintegration of our society. And it hasn't always been that way. Putnam says that this sense of community as a country peaked about 1960, and then it stagnated through the 70s, and then it collapsed in the 80s and the 90s. And there are various reasons for that. One is economics, because to live in this country now, it takes two incomes, and it takes two jobs if you have a family, and people have less time to participate in community activities. The dying out, he says, of the great generation. If you were born between 1910 and 1940, you are a part of the great American generation, but you're declining quickly. That generation was the most civically minded generation in the history of the world. And the generations replacing them are not as engaged. But here's the major factor on why community in North America is collapsing. You ready? Technology. The reason that generation was so great is it came of age before the television. It came of age before computers. It came of age before the internet. And now we are more technologically connected than any time in our history. And yet, thank you for the selfie back there, and yet, we are more disconnected with people, as if looking into a screen is actually the same thing as talking to someone face-to-face. It is not. All you Facebook users, it is not. Was that forceful enough? Okay. In fact, researchers say that the level of trust in this country was greater during the days of the Pony Express, when it took months to communicate with someone on the other side of the continent. The level of trust in American society was higher then than it is now. You know why you don't trust people? Because we really don't know people. We don't know the people around us. Well, what does all this technology and cocooning and apple pies have to do with Hebrews 13? Well, you don't see it. It has everything to do with the verses we've read. A Christian requirement, a hallmark of what it means to be a person of faith, is hospitality. Followers of Jesus are always swimming upstream and against the grain of conventional wisdom and actions, and that includes this subject here. If everyone else is retreating and cocooning and residing in these mirrored echo chambers where they only hear and see themselves and people like themselves, then as disciples of Christ, we are called to break that mold. We are called to act and to be different. And in this world, that means to be hospitable toward strangers. Now, does that mean that we simply play nice in the sandbox? Does that mean that we just say, hello, how are you, at church on Sunday, or that we make sure a new guest or visitor to our potluck feels welcome? Well, that's some of it, but it means a whole lot more than that. Hospitality, as used in the New Testament, is not simply being nice to people around you, although just being nice would go a long way in this world. It's not about being sentimental, where you ask someone how y'all doing today and you really don't care how they are. It's just something you ask. Hospitality is an openness to the stranger. It is an embrace of the one who has no other place to go. It is an open door to those that Jesus called the least of these. In the primitive church, in the first century when these words, or second century when these words were written, there were no Super 8 motels. There were no golden arches. There was no hotels.com. When travelers were on a long journey, they were at the mercy of whatever they found at the stops they made. And an early Christian vocation was for Christians to open up their doors to travelers and to say, we don't know you, but we will treat you as our friends. And that's the admonition coming from the writer of Hebrews. Your friends, your neighbors that you don't even know, they need your help. Open your doors to them. And the church became the first place to practice a genuine open door policy because no one else was practicing hospitality. Hospitality is opening the door to the alien, the foreigner, the poor, the estranged, the forgotten, those with no families, and it remains so today. Hospitality is the work of turning strangers into friends. And that's a whole lot more substantial than just asking someone how they are or blowing them an air kiss because you don't want to disturb theirs or your makeup. Hospitality is when we do the heavy lifting of removing barriers that stand in the way of community. Racial, political, social, economic, religious barriers. We aim to cut these chains that have kept the doors locked and shut and open arms and hearts to those who need a place to go. Hospitality puts the burden on us to act in a way that is in the best interest of those that we encounter. William Tyndale was the first person to translate the original Hebrew and Greek manuscripts into English. We are all indebted to him, though at the time, not many people appreciated his efforts. He did so in the early 1500s, and it cost him his life. Things were very different then, and to deregulate the scriptures, which is probably a good term for it, so that common people, English-speaking people could read it, not just those trained in Greek and Latin and Hebrew who were a part of the religious establishment. It was such a scandal that Tyndale was martyred for it. They took him out to a stake and they strangled him to death. And then they burned his body. And then they gathered up his ashes and scattered them in the Thames River to deprive him of resurrection. Now, that's pretty mean. I mean, we're going to kill you, but we're going to make sure you don't even get to heaven. That was really the thinking in their mind. And now when you pick up a Bible and read the English Bible today, it's his work you're reading. But at the time, he wasn't looked on as a hero of biblical translation. Tyndale translated the word hospitality that we've read today like this: a harborous disposition. A harbor. That safe place that ships can come in out of the storm. That's what hospitality is. To have a harborous disposition. That your life, this church, your home, is a place where people who may not have any other place to go can find a little relief in your presence. Cindy and I traveled to Ireland a few years ago, and we stayed in my ancestral village near Belfast. And that village is named Killyleagh, Killyleagh, Northern Ireland, and it only has a few thousand people. And everywhere we would go after being there a couple days, if we went to the grocery store or a gift shop or a restaurant, we'd walk in and we'd start talking, and the proprietor would always say, "Hey, you must be the Americans in town. All little small towns are the same. Gossip travels around." We were the only Americans for 100 miles, I guess. They would say kilos. I don't know what that is, but anyway. It was wonderful. And in the meantime, we became friends with the patrons at the local pub. Surprise, surprise, I know. But you know this, that the pub in Ireland is everything. It's the combination of community center, church, restaurant, first aid station, confessional, counseling office. It's about the only place left in Ireland that Catholics and Protestants can still be seen together. They can't go to church together, but they can go to the pub together. Now that says a lot. Well, in Killyleagh, the pub that we frequented was at the Dufferin Inn, where we stayed, the Dufferin Pub, and they had a great sign above the door, "Suffering at the Dufferin." But it was our experience that there was no suffering involved, because nobody was feeling any pain in that place. Billy, I said this before, after a guy named Billy O'Connell, and he played bass. And I was like, "Billy who?" Billy, Ernie, Artie, Caroline, Austin. They were there every night. And they opened up their arms to us like they had known us our entire lives. And they told us what to see and where to go. And they told tall tales about their country and talked about the suffering of the times of trouble. And they peppered their speech with phrases like spot on, and "what's the crack?" and "are you heading to the scratcher?" and all these other things. And They bought us beers and Jamesons till you had to crawl out the door, and they were all driving home afterwards. How are y'all doing this? It was actually hard to tear yourself away from them. They became our friends because we were in a strange land. Strangers in a strange land, taken in and treated like family. That's hospitality. Though Austin, the owner and bartender, said that the Irish are not friendly. "We're not the friendly, we're only nosy. We want to know where you're coming from and what you're up to," he would say. And maybe that's how hospitality works in the South. We're not hospitable people, we're just nosy. If I don't know your mama and them and where you come from, I got to figure out who you are and where you fit in around here. Amen? But wasn't your grandmother hospitable? Didn't we learn those things from our grandparents? You go into her house, "Oh, child, come in this house and sit down. Let me get you something to eat." "No, I've already had something to eat. I just came by to visit." "Oh, I got a cobbler. Just come out of the stove and it's ready to eat right now." No, I'm not that hungry. Well, I got these berries, and they were just so fresh, I couldn't let them pass. And I got the, well, I tell you what, I'm going to have a bite. It won't be any trouble. I'm the doctor's told me to watch what I'm eating, and I really shouldn't do that. Well, I'm going to get me a plate just yet. Well, if you're going to get you a plate, I guess it's, if you're not going to go to any, and before you know it, you've sat there and you ate the whole thing, right? That's easy to do when it's your grandmother. It's easy to do when it's your family. It's real easy to do if it's blackberry cobbler and ice cream. Easy. Can we take that kind of hospitality, that is that kind of persistent hospitality, and treat strangers that way? Because that's the only way you get to know any person. Take a look, if you would, at that word hospitality. It's printed for you there. Look at the word. What other word do you see? Hospital. Isn't that interesting? A hospital originally was not a medical facility. It was a guest house. That's the origin of the word. And it began way back in the Middle Ages when pilgrims were traveling from Europe to Jerusalem and back again. Some were pilgrims, some were crusaders. But they made this long journey from England and France to Jerusalem, through Germany and Austria and Southern Europe and Asia Minor, finally Palestine. And today, you can fly that distance in about 6 hours. In the Middle Ages, if you were going to walk that distance or sail that distance, round trip, it took you 3 years. So along the Pilgrim Road, guest houses were established. They were, and if you've ever traveled to Europe, you know this word, hostels. Hospitals. It was the same word. And they practiced hospitality. They took strangers in, provided them food, cared for their wounds, gave them a safe, warm, dry place to sleep, and when the pilgrim was rested and ready, he or she would be on his way once again. The root of hospital and hostel and hospitality is a word that has been transliterated directly into the English language just in the last 50 years. In 1967, a woman named Dr. Cicely Saunders created a specialized care center for dying patients in London. And she called it St. Christopher's. And it was her conviction that the dying were worthy of and should receive the same dignity and care given to patients who would recover. In fact, the dying deserved more care, compassionate, palliative, pain-relieving care, because these patients were pilgrims on their last long journey. And it was a hard one. And they needed a place to be taken in. Saunders created that first place, and calling on the original use of the word back to Tyndale and the Latin meaning, she called it a hospice. 2 years later, when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who we all read in college, published her groundbreaking book on death and dying and called for this type of practical hospitality in the United States, hospice care as we know it today was born. And the root of the word is hospitality. Do you want to know what Christian hospitality is? You care for another human being as if they were on their last journey, giving them everything they need to be on their way. Hospice does not belong to the healthcare industry. That's a work that belongs to the church. And it's not just for the dying. It's needed for all weary travelers on their long journeys. It is an invitation to come in, to no longer be an outsider, and to find yourself at home. It is to fulfill the words of Jesus, who said, "Come and inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in." Let us pray together. Us, an act of grace.